Welcome home. We are WNST AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively taking the Maryland Crab Cake Tour on the road this week, and it is a big week. The NFL Draft is Thursday night. Luke's going to be monitoring that out in Owings Mills. The Orioles come home Friday. We're going to be down at Fadley's in Lexington Market live from 2 until 5. We will have the Pac-Man giveaways on Friday. Stop by. I have some other invited guests as well after that, and then, of course, the Orioles taking on the A's, and the Ravens will have day two of the draft, the always important second day with Eric DaCosta. So Luke's got double duty. I'm also going to be beginning it all on Wednesday afternoon from 2 until 4 will be a Greenmount Bowl. That's the bowling center next to Greenmount Station where I've done the show a million times. We'll be over there having a crab cake at 4 o'clock. By the way, Luke, are you duck pin or are you 10 pin? Please tell me because this would – I mean, you always claim Essex as being like a spiritual homeland for you. You better get this one right.
I mean, as a kid, I love duck pin, but when you move up to Pennsylvania – there's only 10 pins. So, I mean, I'm not a big bowler one way or the other. I absolutely enjoy duck pin, but it feels like it's kind of going away a lot, right? So the last few times I've bowled, full disclosure, it's been 10 pins. So
you know what I need to do? I got to call Wiseman. I got to call Wiseman, our PBA 10-pin Hall of Famer. No one loves the Orioles like Wiseman, dude. Like Wiseman, he moved to Florida. He loves the Orioles. I got to get him on. And he loves animals. He did Show Your Soft Side 2 weeks ago, so I'll get him on. I'm drinking from my Cole Roofing mug. I want to get Bill Cole some love because he is one of the narrators of the 25th anniversary documentary. I don't know if he's going to be on this week. He was on last week. We did a long sort of segment talking about it, and it's a very special week here. We're releasing the film at 5:08 on Thursday. I hope everybody's online with that. We've got a lot of baseball on the West Coast, right? I'm going to be up at Greenmount for the 4 o'clock first pitch inside Greenmount Station having a crab cake. Might get some ribs. Everything on that menu looks like something I want, especially the dessert menu. And you know, you've been there a bunch of times as well. It is widely featured in the film with Eric Weddle and Steve Smith and Dennis Pitta and all the people we ever took up there. This baseball thing, it's destination now, right? And I talked to Leonard Raskin about that last week. Bill Cole, who's not a baseball family per se, says everybody in his world, it's like, when's the next game? Oh, they play on the West Coast. We got to stay up late and they're 4 o'clock when, and they come home when, and they're doing what, and Jackson Holiday's this and that. And it's really opened the door, I think, for people to get back to baseball, to knowing Yankees players, to knowing who Bobby Witt Jr. is over the weekend, or realize that Otani's not in that part of Anaheim anymore. He's making his bet. I mean, his guy's making his bets up the road in LA at this point. So, but we will go fishing for trout here the last next couple nights, right?
Yeah, Mike Trout, and unfortunately for the Angels, which has become a common theme for them from the moment he left D.C. to join them, Anthony Rendon back on the IL, an Angels team that had actually been okay until recently. I mean, they've lost 7 of their last 10. They're coming into this series on a losing streak, and like I said, Rendon goes down, and we saw them the first series of the year. I don't think expectation. I mean, they weren't very good with Otani the last few years, so this is certainly a series where you're hoping the Orioles take care of business and get a series win and come home feeling good about themselves as they settle in to play Oakland over the weekend and then the Yankees after that. But, you know, I mean, it's I think it's important, especially when you have the Orioles off to such a good start. In a previous segment, we talked about their bullpen a little bit. We talked about areas of the team that could be a little bit better. I mean, it could always be a little bit better. But you kind of survey the rest of the league and you look around and you see a team like the Angels that, you know, frankly reminds me of where the Orioles were for a very long time, going back to pre-Dan Duquette, where, you know, they were kind of just there and they spend money at times and would have a higher payroll at times, but never felt like they were spending wisely, never felt like they were all in one way or the other. Always felt like if things went perfectly, they were maybe setting up to compete for a wild card if everything falls the way you want it to. And that's just, it's not a way to plan. It's not a way to go through long term as a baseball team. And I think the Angels have reflected that. And to your point, you have Mike Trout, who, you know, has been one of the all-time great players of the last 30, 40 years, you know, a guy who's going to be in the Hall of Fame. And even with some of the injuries he's had in recent years, still put up amazing numbers over the course of the last decade plus. And what do they have to show for it? And it's real easy, and people are oftentimes quick to point the finger at the aforementioned player, when the problem is it's not having enough around them. And that's where the Angels find themselves now, especially with Rendon back on the IL. So, this is an opportunity for the Orioles to go there, take care of business, at least win 2 out of 3. That's their goal against anyone, let alone if we're talking about a team that isn't very good, that you're hoping you can maybe get a sweep, but at least get 2 out of 3. They've got Albert Suarez going, Grayson Rodriguez in game two, Dean Kramer for that Wednesday afternoon game, as you mentioned. I mean, this is
Let's
another
talk
one of
about
those
Kramer
series
for a
where
minute.
you're better.
Kramer needs to be better too, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think, it's odd because you look at Friday night when he pitched. I mean, it wasn't like he was awful in that game, but Alec Marsh was better. And, certainly the bullpen coming in behind him did him no favors. So you look at the numbers and, he's got an ERA of 4.91. I mean, that's obviously not great. But, at the same time, do I think Dean Kramer's been awful this year? No, I don't. So this is kind of where we talk about this, where when they acquired Corbin Burns, we were talking about Dean Kramer being what, their fourth or fifth starter. And instead, he's kind of been their third starter. De facto, although they had Tyler Wells technically start the third game of the season. But he's got to be a little more consistent. There's no doubt about that. At the same time, Dean Kramer, especially what he did over the course of the second half last year, I mean, he's got a track record now going back a bit where I'm not as concerned with him overall. He'd be the first to tell you he needs to be a little bit better, needs to finish a couple of these starts on a little bit of a higher note. But at the same time, Friday night, you look at the final score. It wasn't him who gave up the bulk of that. I mean, he 5 2/3 innings. He's one out away from the official quality start statistic, for whatever that's worth. But gave them a chance to win. But they didn't swing the bats until Adley Rutschman hit the grand slam. So, he needs to be better. There's no question about that. But I don't look at his, albeit small body of work so far this year, and say that it's been some. One of their problems that I'm really overly concerned about. I think, Dean Kramer pitched well last year, and over the last couple of years has grown a lot from where he was, and you
Well,
just
even
need
if he's
him to be a
mediocre and he gives
little
him some
some more
length,
consistent.
that helps things, right? I mean, if he can give you six
Yeah.
instead of 4 2/3, and it's four run, it's okay on a night when, Gunner's got 3 hits and Jackson Holliday's got 2, and you've scored 6 runs, that feels a lot better handing the ball off in the sixth or seventh inning than the fourth or fifth inning.
Right. I mean, you're always looking for that. I mean, and for the most part, even from their starters where it hasn't been as good so far, not talking Burns and Rodriguez, but the rest of the rotation, for the most part, they've gotten that. They haven't had too many starts where someone's knocked out in the third or fourth inning. For the most part, even their mediocre starts, they're guys getting into the fifth, getting into the sixth, where you can manage that. I mean, around baseball, I mean, starting pitchers, and getting into some big picture topics here, with elbow injuries and max effort and velocity and spin and all the different things that people are talking about, pitch clock. But no one, it's not really set up for starting pitchers to go 6, 7, 8 innings consistently anymore. I mean, your roster's not structured that way. I mean, that's why you have an 8-man bullpen because you're not expecting your starters to go that deep. So, really, from whether you're talking about Kramer, whether you're talking about what Cole Irvin did. I mean, Cole Irvin, it's not like he missed a ton of bats on Sunday, but he pitched it deep into the game. He pitched well. He pitched a contact effectively. I mean, that's the Cole Irvin that they thought they were getting from Oakland. He's not a guy that's going to wow you with the stuff. But if you can get starts like that more often than not, that's where you keep your bullpen in a good state, where you're not overworking guys. You're not having to call up guys on the Norfolk shuttle and doing things in that way. So, from that standpoint, I mean, yeah, Dean Kramer needs to be better. I mean, 4.91, he'd be the first to tell you he's not thrilled with that. But at the same time, even when these guys haven't been, even Corbin Burns, it's not like Corbin Burns has been peak Corbin Burns every single time out, but you see what an ace looks like, that even when he's not at his absolute best, you have a heck of a chance to win still. And that's the value of an ace. That's the value of a number two in Grayson Rodriguez, who looks like could be an ace for some other teams, the way he's pitching at this point early on, and really the second half of last year. So, it's You're chasing perfection. You're chasing improvement, and certainly Dean Kramer fits into that category, and really the back half of the rotation at this point. But to your point, when you're swinging the bat the way that they are right now, and look, the Orioles are going to go through some times where they don't swing the bats quite as well. And we even saw that after after the first series of the year, they had a week there where they didn't swing it quite as well. So that's going to happen, and that's where you're hoping. At that point in time, the pitching will pick you up. But yeah, I mean, where they stand right now, I mean, it can always get better, but the pitching has been good enough to support what's been a top five kind of offense around baseball and number one for the home run department, that's for sure.
Luke Jones is here. He will be there at Camden Yards on Friday and with us at Fadley's. I'm wearing my Fadley's gear around it. How was that shrimp salad, man? We never talked about it. I only want to talk about it because I haven't
Excellent.
had any of it in like 3 months. So I'm not even going for the crab cake on Friday. I know it's crab cake tour, and I'll be giving away the Pac-Man scratch-offs, and people will be coming up to me trying to get their $2 when they won from me. And I got the scanner out. I got it all going. I got the app downloaded. I'm ready for everybody at MB Lottery. But on Friday, we'll be down at Fadley's. I'm going to go shrimp salad, I think, this week. And I think I'm going to go to the ballpark on Friday. At least I'm going to try to go to the ballpark. You're going to be drafting here this weekend. We'll have plenty of time to talk football draft. Were you with them in the homecoming part of this? There's the weirdest thing, and we sort of glossed over it a little bit in the last segment of like, we're a week out on the Yankees coming to Baltimore, and they're fans too, right? I mean, it'll be all of that. But battle for first place in the division early in the year. I haven't checked the weather forecast to see what's in the popcorn machine for that next week, but big series in April. Big series for new ownership, big series for television, big series for, hey, it's the Yankees and they're the team. And oh, yeah, they didn't play last year, but they're playing this year. And, it's a chance to see how big your muscles are this early in the year.
Yeah, I mean, and the Yankees are saying the same thing, mind you. I mean, the Orioles are the defending division champions, so really, it's more so for the Yankees to show that. And but
By the
for
way,
late
82
April,
and
yeah, it's going to
sunny
be
on
exciting.
Monday. Right, for early forecast, 82 and sunny on Monday, next Monday. How about
Get
that?
back to me at the end of the week for a week out from that. I
Got
mean,
81 and sunny on Sunday is what I got. If you're sitting in a rain
good
delay
because.
Sunday with the A's, it's not my fault,
Good. I mean, especially when we're having frost warnings in the final week of
Listen.
April, at
As
least
long as
in
my
my
press
neck of the
credential
woods.
is
But
under review, I'm going to promote the baseball team at David Rubenstein and tell folks they need to get down to the ballpark. I'll tell them the same thing that Jeff Arnold's telling them up the
yeah,
dial. So.
well, and keep in mind, I mean, in this new day and age where you have a more balanced schedule, I mean, you're not playing the Yankees 19 times. So when you have your two home series, your two road series against your division opponents, you want to take advantage. And especially when you're playing well. I mean, the Yankees are playing well, have played very well to open the season. They've come back to earth here a little bit over the last week and a half as they were really off to a hot start. But I mean, Juan Soto has been terrific for them. They're mostly healthy, although other than Garrett Cole, which obviously that's a big caveat right there. But I think the question for the Yankees is, will they stay healthy? Will they continue to stay healthy? I mean, guys in their lineup that they're counting on to do big things beyond Soto and Aaron Judge are guys that have had some injuries. When you're talking about Stanton over the last several years and Anthony Rizzo and go down the list of some of the veteran players they have, there's some questions there that any team faces, but when it's a more veteran-laden club, I think there's a little more skepticism compared to a team like the Orioles, where they don't have very many veterans. I mean, the Orioles veterans are 28, 29, 30 years old. They don't have these guys that are deep into their 30s.
Think
There
of
is a
how
little
good
bit of a
this team
question
would
there,
look with
but
a Nestor on it, this Oriole team. You know what I mean?
Nestor
Just
Cortez,
one
yeah.
Nestor is all they need.
Hey, credit him. I mean, my goodness. I mean, you look at his story, being a Rule 5 guy, couldn't stick for a lousy Orioles team. Even after that, it took him a while to get settled in. It's not like he
Well, he
just went right
wasn't
back
ready,
there.
and we talked about Jackson
Yeah.
Holliday. It's not there. This is not easy to do. I mean, we
No.
sit and watch it every night in admiration or in fandom, and we remember our playing days and little league pictures of mine all having this goofy movie this week. But man, I've stood at the cage and watched these guys professionally for a long, long time. And the confidence level and injuries and this and that, like all of that bakes into this is really hard to do, stick and stick well. So when you say, well, Nestor Cortez should have stuck here, he wasn't ready, man. I mean, we saw that, right? It wasn't, he had an ERA of like infinity for a minute, which didn't do well upon my first name, by the way.
Right. So, but
I'll brag on him now.
It's tough. I mean, it's absolutely tough. That's why, I mean, when, not that many people here in town, but when you'll hear like opposing teams fans talk about the Orioles and say, well, they had all these number one overall picks. And it's like, okay, noted. Adley Rutschman was 1-1. Jackson Holliday was 1. Colton Cowser was the 5th overall pick. Heston Kerstad, who we're going to see at some point because he continues to hit it at Norfolk, was, you know, 2nd. But what about Jordan Westberg, who was a you know, sandwich round pick? What about Gunnar Henderson, who was a 2nd pick? Those are two guys that anyone could have had, right? And the
it's
Orioles
like Ed
drafted
Reed.
Them.
Anybody could
them.
Have had
so,
Ed Reed. Anybody could have had Ray Lewis,
but
right? Literally.
But that said, it's really challenging for these guys to not just get to the major leagues and not just succeed at the major league level, but to sustain that. And that's why it's been so impressive to see what the Orioles are doing. I mean, as I noted in a previous segment, I mean, Colton Cowser and Westberg are hitting 7th and 8th on a lot of nights. And now I'm not sure how much longer that's going to continue, because if they continue to swing the bat like this, and we've seen it even a couple occasions where Cowser's been higher in the order. But the point is, any other team, and I'm not even talking like White Sox bad, any other team in baseball where they don't have this budding embarrassment of riches type of a farm system, they'd be looking at Cowser and Westberg and they're saying those guys are hitting 2nd and 3rd in their order. And they're like tickled. Whereas the Orioles, it's like, oh, well, those guys are hitting in the bottom half of the lineup, you know, and it just speaks to how impressive it really is, how deep this lineup really is, with more on the way at some point in time, and wondering how that's all going to fit, you know, as we've talked about ad nauseum. But to your point, it is difficult and it is challenging. And that's where it is important to have depth, because I don't think Colton Cowser is going to hit 370 all year. You know, to your point, I don't think Jordan Westbrook is going to necessarily slug 640 the rest of the year. They're going to cool off. But at some point in time, Adley Rutschman's going to start hitting bombs. And Jackson Holliday, yes, will start hitting at some point in time, you know, and hopefully it's much sooner rather than later. And, you know, I mean, we were talking about it, Santander, after he had that bunch of RBIs the first few games of the season, he didn't hit until really the end of the Minnesota series. And then we saw him with extra base hits galore at Kauffman Stadium over the weekend. So that's how it's going to generally work. You're so rarely going to have all 9 guys clicking. I mean, you're never going to have all 9 guys clicking. You're rarely going to have 7 guys clicking. And that's where it's kind of been a rare start for this Orioles club.
Do we even mention Mountcastle? Been so good. And Mountcastle's been better than Mountcastle's ever been.
He's been good. Yeah, he's been really good. He's drawn walks. You know, the hasn't hit a ton of home runs, but he's doubles and driving in runs and hitting for average. And like I said, he's drawing the occasional walk, and that's been a knock on him.
All of these guys are a problem. Through his kind of reminds me of, like, you know, the 77 Red Sox with Butch Hobson's batting 9th. And I'm like, all of these guys are a problem, literally.
I mean, just we've talked about Jackson Holliday, and until he starts hitting, he's the soft spot, right? He's the soft spot in the order. He's the only soft spot in the order right now. I mean, you go down Henderson, Rutschman, O'Hearn, Santander, Mountcastle, Mullins, Cowser, Westberg. I mean, you're not just talking about 8 guys there that have produced, at least, you know, even in Rutschman's case, he hasn't hit for a lot of power so far, but he's hitting for average. I mean, he's almost hitting 300. So it's not like he's been bad. So you look at that top 8, and then you get to Jackson Holliday and say, okay, well, right now, yeah, right now the kid's the hole in the lineup. Oh, he's 1-1. He's the best prospect in baseball. I mean, you just think in a big picture sense, it's incredible. And that's before you even get to Heston Kerstad, Kobe Mayo, you know, guys that are waiting for opportunities at AAA, guys that for most teams in baseball would be in the majors at this point because they've produced at AAA at that level. But right now they're blocked. You know, right now there's not a clear path to playing time for them.
But
so,
the thing about Elias and these guys is salvaging these players from other organizations like O'Hearn,
sure,
identifying McCann as being the right guy. I mean, he's behind the hydration system, for crying out loud. That's how important he is. But all, Cano, I mean, just identifying other used goods and other departments that you can tweak, and that's on the major league level when you have 1-1s and 1-5s and guys that are producing and guys that are already here and got, like I look at this again, and I began the whole conversation as we stay up late with the Angels and wait for the A's to get here and look forward to the Yankees next week. They got eight guys who are going to hit 20 home runs if nobody's arms fall off, right? Like literally, that's the kind of power and production. And as I'm doing this countdown for this movie releasing on Thursday, all these single-digit players. That wasn't the case with Al Bunbury. That wasn't the case with Bill Ripken. That was maybe the case with Melvin Moore, but it wasn't the case with Mark Belanger. Ripken at different points in his career was much more of a threat to hit a home run than to hit a double down the line. But that notion that, and a great promotion for the lottery and home run riches as well, because I tell John Martin, I hope you're ready to give some money away. You're going to give money away when they hit home runs. They're going to hit a hell of a lot of home runs. Going to give money away when they hit grand slams. Well, they already have one. They hit six last year. They're going to hit eight or nine this year because they're going to put runners on base. And I've never seen anything like it. Like, I really do compare it to some bought teams that maybe the Yankees had. I mean, the Indians had some loaded teams with Ramirez and, Lofton could hit 25 home runs. They had those, Baerga, those teams. Man, I can couple hands in baseball in all the years I've been watching where a team has eight, and I'm not even counting Holiday. I'm saying eight guys that not can hit 20, will hit 20 home runs, and a couple of them might hit 40.
Yeah, look, I mean, everyone's got to stay healthy. And again, guys are going to struggle at different times. I mean, are they going to lead the majors in home runs all year? I mean, it's looking like they could. Yeah, I mean, no question about it. But I'm glad you brought it up because it ties in nicely with the lottery, the Maryland lottery, where you look at what they've done beyond the top draft picks, even beyond the second round picks. But they've also taken swings with lottery ticket type guys like a Ryan O'Hearn, where they identify him and say, okay, this guy hasn't figured it out in Kansas City and they're done with him. We have a
He's a
need.
failed Colton Cowser type player, right? You know.
I mean, even if it wasn't that lofty yet, but he was a prospect and it didn't work out. And you look at someone like that and you say, you know what? It's great to have number one picks and first round picks and our own guys, but let's also show that we're worth our salt from a pro scouting standpoint and look for opportunities. Last year it was quite evident over the off last offseason, 2 off seasons ago, that they brought in Ryan O'Hearn. They brought in a couple other guys with similar profiles, guys that had been prospects, interesting talents elsewhere, and it didn't work out for whatever reason. Guys are hurt, guys get a percep they get the perception that they're a quad A player, whatever it might be. But they brought in a few guys like that. And O'Hearn was the guy that didn't make the club out of spring training, but he was the guy that I think it was pretty evident they thought the most highly of that group. And he got an opportunity and he ran with it. And he's running with it again this year. This past offseason, for all the talk of Corbin Burns and acquiring him and talking about trading for Dylan Cease or other pitchers that were out there on the free agent market. It was last September when the Orioles identified someone like Albert Suarez, who, look, I want to be clear, one start, second start this
And you
week.
might
We'll
hear this on
see.
Tuesday, and things might not go as well Monday night.
Right. He might be awful. Right. Exactly. But the point is, you're still looking for those opportunities. You don't want to leave any stone unturned. And this is the Ravens, for as much as we talk about drafting, as much as we talk about Lamar's contract or Justin Madubuike's contract or Mark Andrews' contract, they also do such an excellent job from a pro scouting standpoint where you look at guys and say, you know what? That's a guy that we think we can make a couple adjustments. We think bring him in with our coaches, we'll coach him up, and that guy will be a decent player. John Simpson was a great example of this. John Simpson had been a starter for the Raiders, cast off. I mean, the Ravens signed him to a reserve future deal last year, and he became their starting left guard, and he played well enough. Now, I wouldn't have given him this money, and that's why the Ravens said bye-bye to him. He played well enough that the New York Jets gave him real money to be their starting left guard this year. But that's a perfect example. It's one thing, even guys like Clowney and Kyle Van Noy, where you talk about later in the season signings, they're at least commodities, right? They're at least known, they're household names. How many times have we seen the Ravens go pick someone up off the trash heap and suddenly, wow, that guy's actually a player. That guy actually helps them.
And sometimes
You
it's
need.
cornerbacks too, like really tough positions.
Sure. I mean, Ronald Darby was a name, was a guy that was a name, but he'd been injured. He had so many, he was one of those guys that you didn't want to invest a long-term contract in, but for a one-year deal, when you have a need and you need some depth, works out great. So the point is,
And
and
they
I,
spent
you
money on the
know,
kid from the Colts, and he wasn't any good.
yeah, I mean, it didn't spend a lot, but yeah, that you're not going to bat a thousand, right? That's why you want to cast a wide net. And that's the whole point I'm trying to make here with the Orioles, as they get to a point where hopefully payroll is increasing. Hopefully you're at least extending a couple of your guys. You're not going to sign everyone. We understand that. Nor should you sign everyone. I mean, that would be bad business to sign everyone. As I said, go back and rewind the tape, and you'll find people 2 years ago clamoring for Trey Mancini to get a 3-year contract. Trey Mancini's out of baseball right now. I mean, that's how it's gone. So I'm not picking on Trey. I'm just saying not everyone warrants another contract. But as you're going to do more of that, as you're going to get more expensive from a payroll standpoint, and hopefully a lot more expensive as it pertains to just keeping the guys you want to keep, you still need to find those guys. And you're not going to be drafting in the top five anymore. So you need to find some of those Ryan O'Hearn, some of those guys that are, Danny Coulomb is another great example of that. Danny Coulomb, they got 3 days before the season started last year, and he was their third best reliever. You mentioned Yennier Cano, who was, kind of a throw-in piece in the Jorge Lopez trade. So
Well, that's
you
where you
need some
have
of
the
that.
confidence level as we get to draft week with DaCosta and all that. You have this confidence level that they're identifying some guy on the edge of the White Sox roster or the edge of one of these teams. We're not more than the White Sox fans aren't even watching the White Sox. And my last name's Aparicio, man. Like, what is that? Dude, crazy.
They are as bad as the Orioles were at their worst,
Or the Astros 10
and
years ago, I think.
maybe a little worse than that. I mean, they are horrendous. Obviously they were just in Philadelphia, so they weren't too far to up the road. And I joked with my brother-in-law. I said, Phillies are going to get right this weekend. That White Sox team is horrendous,
Well,
horrendous.
then the
And
Astros, sort of on the edge of this flame that they've been for the last
yeah.
decade, I wouldn't have known they were in DC other than, I'm not wagering on it, but like I say Mid-Atlantic Sports, and pff, it's one and two that the Nationals are going to pop up on my TV, and they did on Sunday, and I'm like, oh, playing the Astros, nobody's there. Oh, look at the Astros. Oh, like. It does happen quickly, and great example would be all weekend, you and I watching the Royals, right? All the improvements to the stadium. They have all the decks in the outfield. They moved the fountains back a little bit, even though our guys can still hit the ball into it, obviously. But I love that stadium. I have pictures of my parents in it that I was looking through for this 25th anniversary movie I'm doing this week. I picked the one from St. Louis, not Kansas City, because it was a better picture in front of Busch Stadium to use in the film. But I love Kansas City. And people were out there eating barbecue over the weekend, and we're arguing Q39 and Jag Stack, and I'm doing all that. But then you see, like, I said to my wife, I'm like, it's 60 degrees on a Sunday afternoon. There's nobody there. They just voted to give the middle finger to both the owners, right? I mean, they just won Super Bowl, another Super Bowl, and the voters there are like, we're not paying for a stadium for you billionaires. The players have revolted on Hunt on the football side to say we don't like the way things are being done, even when they're winning championships. And you and I were there at a time when the Royals' fervor was through the moon for 5 minutes, and everybody busted out their Willie Wilson and their Amos Otis and their George Brett gear and their Paul Splitorff jerseys. But it does. They won. They had the biggest parade ever, and the football team's been so good there. But it feels like their brand's like not good. I mean, after losing a little while after winning, that it's that hard. The Royals, the Nationals, I see the Caps are in the playoffs now and everybody's all capped up again. But like these flares of sports fandom and support inside of buildings, boy, the Orioles better get some people there when they're winning. Like literally, because the minute you start to lose, it becomes a lot tougher. And I think I see that moving around. It'll be interesting to see what happens to the Astros if they lose a little bit, because they've been the story over the last 15 years of having nothing to selling out to suite owners to doing it the way Rubenstein needs to do it here. And I spent a long ride back from Syracuse with the great professor from Georgetown University discussing these things on Friday coming back from Springsteen, because like it is first and foremost in my mind of like, how is this sustainable, Mr. Rubenstein? How is this sustainable through bad teams, good years, bad years, stars, injuries, all of that? Because we're at the beginning of something that I really want to see a renaissance here that doesn't look like the empty stadium in Kansas City, or God knows what we're going to be talking about all week with the Sacramento A's, you know?
Yeah. I mean, a couple of things. I mean, Kansas City, I mean, they've lost 106 games last year. No one's excited about an 11-9 start. You know, I mean, anyone in Kansas City right now saying, get back to us in June. And that's fair, right? And, you know, your point about the Royals and the Chiefs and the vote, I mean, you know, I haven't followed that intimately closely, but my understanding was that was kind of haphazardly put together for a vote. And I think there was very much a perception of, no, there needs to be more thought put into this. That was my initial reaction to that. And look, I say this as someone who sports is my livelihood. I'm okay with a community taking a stand and saying the billionaire owners.
Dude, you were witness to the billionaire football owner running from me and the general manager running from me at an event in Florida because they couldn't even face up and speak to me. So after taking $600 million to build what they're building, and by the way, I learned a lot more about what they're building. You know, you've sat at the 50-yard line for the last time, right, at the Ravens games?
Yeah.
As media? Yeah. I think fans don't even know what's going on. I've had fans write to me
about
their seats
about
being
media.
Taken away.
Fans don't care about that, though.
But fans
care more about their own.
Their
they don't
seats
care about the
getting taken away, and things are getting moved around down there.
Well,
they're building
and
a bigger, better stadium.
This is what happens, and I think, you know, we're seeing this trans. We're going to see this with Camden Yards as well. You know, I think there's – when you're seeing these stadium improvements, and this is a very general comment. I'm not intimately familiar with every single renovation that goes on in every ballpark at this point, but it is really a lot of pandering and catering to the top tax bracket, right? I mean, you know, the exclusivity of a home plate club, a 50-yard line club, you know, whatever it might be. And in the meantime, fans who are more of the middle tax bracket, you know, the middle class, so to speak, fans that, you know, it is quite an investment to have season tickets, you know, that's a big part of your disposable income, where they're getting moved further away from the action. They're being displaced. And I think that's where
I'm familiar
you look
with
at
that,
this.
By the way, I'm intimately familiar with that.
I mean, it's unfortunate, you know, you know, I understand the economics of it, but is that going to make for a better stadium experience, which is what everyone talks about? Well, if you're really rich and you've got a few thousand bucks to drop at every NFL game you go to, then sure, probably. But for the fan who spends every last disposable nickel that they have to have season tickets or to have a 26 game plan in baseball, then, you know, you kind of get priced out, or you get moved out, right? You get moved further away from the action. I mean, I think that's probably, you know, as you're seeing more and more NFL stadium renovations, I think the biggest thing, you know, you see these field level suites, right? And, you know, that's great for the people that can afford them. And, you know, I'm not sitting here trying to bash anyone, but is that going to lead to the best home field advantage for a team? Is that going to lead to the best atmosphere for a team? Is that going to lead to the best fan experience in the sense of having 70,000 rabid fans loud for
This is why I don't trust Sashi Brown as being the decision maker with the $600 million of public money and then running from me like a coward and sitting with you and three other reporters and being relatively disinterested in offering anything, you know, other than platitudes and stuff written on a legalese notebook. That people should expect more. It's draft weekend. Everybody's going out to Detroit. We'll have a good time. We'll talk about it. But to whom much is given, much is expected, and really should be demanded given the amount of money. Because to your point and my point, they're playing in a slum. I tell you, I went to all the ballparks. 2015, I've done something very few people have done. I know these renovations because I've sat in the ballparks. I was in Cleveland in 1995. When I go in there now, I see areas that used to be a club level that are now something different. All of these parks have changed because they're 30 years old now, and they're all going back to the state and asking for the money. In Texas, they got a second stadium built. You and I saw that. We're scratching our heads and we're like, the hell are they smoking down here in Arlington? Too much oil money, I guess, because and then they win a World Series last year and sort of justify it by filling it up. But in other places, California, where the A's are coming in here and it's an ish show that Major League Baseball can't figure out. You and I drove past Tropicana Field, and you literally, and you're not even a mean-spirited guy, you were pissing on it as we went by, laughing at it. You literally were laughing that they play baseball in that thing, and they've been doing it for 30 years, and they don't have a solution. And meanwhile, we have this palace here with this creep that owned it for 30 years, and now we have like a great team, fresh owner, Cal Ripken's back. They have all of this opportunity, but in other places, they're not getting that. In Kansas City, they didn't vote that way for the football team or the baseball team. It's not happening in California. And the revenue side of this really is at the heart of how the Orioles can improve. I keep going back to saying, why did I spend $14 on a beer at Syracuse the other night to see Bruce Springsteen? Because he's getting most of it, like all of it. And that's what it demands when Adley Rutschman needs $40 million and Gunnar Henderson needs $40 million and Lamar Jackson needs $50 million and down the line, and it explodes in that way. The fans pay for it. They do, whether it's rich fans buying $800 things or my upper deck seat that Chad Steele threw me out of in the front row that once was a $35 ticket that now would rate as a $100 or $110 ticket, but because they threw me out of it and it's in the front row, they'll jack it up to two and a quarter when the Steelers are in town in-house and call that a resale ticket, which is garbage. It is the team scalp their own tickets because they all need to figure out revenue because they all have some guy like Chad Steele and Sashi Brown sitting down the hallway in a suit trying to figure out like, we got to make numbers because we have to pay the next player the next round of money. And we've played the game here with Angelos and doing it the wrong way for a long, long time. But I am really interested in what Mike Elias, David Rubenstein, and whomever the Sashi Brown of the Orioles is going to look at the payroll for baseball here with the renovations coming, gambling, all the things that are happening, the city, new mayor, maybe a new mayor. I don't know. Maybe the old mayor will be the new mayor. I don't know. I'm still chasing Brandon to try to get him on. But where is this going to be 5, 7, 10 years from now as David Rubenstein, a 74-year-old guy, buys this team, has all this money and all this opportunity, and the state's chipping in at $600 million? Man, it is go time for 1992 all over again. And that's the thing that really excites me, Luke, because I'm a little older than you, but I was here when it was built the first time and 3.6 million people came. And I saw 35,000 people come for Wise Run the Bases Day the other day. And I start to think about, like, what is this when it's done? It can't be where Kansas City is, where it's empty again. It can't not em I mean empty. It can't be empty again. It's got to be where a Cincinnati or a St. Louis has been, which is vibrant, and they got to backfill people like your sister and her kids because like old white guys is all it is, and it's got to get better than that. And part of that is the money and what the young kids have to come down and they have to endure $14 beers too because that's what's going to fund it.
Yeah, but I mean, it's all encompassing. I mean, you're focused, a lot of what you just mentioned talked about attendance and stadia, but what's TV going to look like? I mean, seriously, I mean, that is, I'm much more interested in that because that
You
can be
gotta
that.
get me the game and make me feel good about it, make me feel good about the price, and I
And
gotta be
then,
able to get I 100% agree
and
with you.
think about, I mean, look, that at the end of the day, I know the model has changed dramatically over the course of the last 50 years, but the whole idea of baseball games being shown on television was to be a commercial to get people to come down to the ballpark, right? I mean, you watch a Masson telecast, how many ads, whether they're talking about Kevin Brown doing a live ad read in the middle of the broadcast, or they're advertising for Brandon Hyde's bobblehead night that's coming up this weekend, so. But so much of that was always about how do you get people to come to the ballpark? That's why, to me, it was a missed opportunity, especially when the Orioles were really bad, you know, at the bottom of the barrel with the rebuild, to not have 20 games on WJZ or 20 games on, you know, MAR, whatever it was, to have some free advertising to try to get people to come out to the ballpark. Instead, it was, you know, you have Masson or
Oh, look, man, John
whatever.
Angelo's decision making is just
I
like
understood,
it's yes, the
but
damage
there's
is done, clearly, right? I mean, all the
understood, but
damage
the
is what David Rubenstein's inherited.
right, but I guess for me, I'm not even. It's not even to me just about the Orioles. You're seeing that across baseball, where that's, you know, that was a missed opportunity at times. But you know, now it's a matter of, okay, what's Masson going to look like? How profitable is it going to be? How's it going to be distributed? You know, it's on Fubo TV now, which actually is a streaming package that my brother or my brother-in-law just got, because he can actually get the Orioles and the Phillies games in Southern New York County, Pennsylvania, which sounds crazy to think that that was a challenge to do, but it's the first time that either one of us could pay for it legally without using a VPN to actually be able to get both teams' games, because he wants to watch the Phillies and the Orioles. How crazy is that when you're talking about a team that is in the primary Baltimore market and is part of Phillies' footprint as it pertains to baseball territory? So,
There's an
you know.
arrogance baked into this, brother, that I cannot, you know, you've been around it, you've seen it. You mean the guy who runs the Orioles has never spoken to you, and you're my reporter. It's been there 15 years. I mean, like, as long as they're letting TJ Brightman and Greg Bader make decisions around there, they're gonna get Angelo's era, and I'm gonna go nuts about this, especially when we don't have anybody covering the game on Friday night, because I'm getting a little bit they're getting $600 million, you're new to town. You know, first things first, as Charles Steinberger say, be nice to people, be nice to everybody. There's been a lot of trauma here, and there's a lot of ways to build the thing back. But at the end of the day, here's where, yeah, I really think about this as the A's come to town this week. I just think about how bad Major League Baseball has been at all of this. The fact that people in Pennsylvania can't get Phillies games. This isn't just an Angelo's, but it is here. Locally, it was a major Angelo's problem that there was such ineptitude, malfeasance, malevolence, just all the mals were here. All the bads were here for 30 years. But Major League Baseball has effed up Miami, Tampa, Arizona to some degree. All the California stuff's been a mess, you know, beyond trying to figure out Anaheim's a dead doorknob, Oakland's kind of gone, and they were trying to contract teams in Selig's era. They had drug problems forever, and now they can't run their business. I mean, it's the most important thing you have is your franchise, and they're bringing this half-assed show in here this weekend. And you mentioned Chicago. I mean, Oakland's not even the biggest embarrassment in the sport. Chicago is on the field right now. And that they allow this, it's like the NFL. What's the bottom, Mike Brown? What's the bottom, Al Davis? Like, what are we going to allow to be the bottom? And it's got to be better for Major League Baseball, I think, all the way around, to get their act together. And that would include like eliminating the Angelos types from owning franchises and wrecking them.
Yeah, I mean, you have bad ownership in any sport. You know, are the White Sox you know, are they a black mark on the game right now? I mean, I don't know. I mean, you're always going to have really bad teams. And look, the Orioles, for all this talk we want to talk about tanking, it's worked out really well for the Orioles. I mean, it has. If they had done it in any other way, I'm not sure they'd be sitting where they are right now, as it pertains to how the bottom had completely fallen out, and Mike Elias said, we got to rebuild this thing, and this isn't going to be a quick fix. So, but your overall point is well taken, and certainly when you look at some of these markets, yeah. But I think some of what David Rubenstein is walking into isn't just a product of the Angelos family, or just the product of decades of mediocrity on the field and off, quite frankly. Some of it is just, you know, baseball having to figure this out, and you know, hockey and the NBA are dealing with these matters too. I mean, how do you reimagine what sports television looks like when the cable satellite model is cratering? You know, I mean, it's not gone yet, but it is on rapid decline. So
And
how does
nobody
that
has
look?
a solution. Nobody
Well,
has.
I mean, the solution is clearly direct to consumer options, but what is the price point? What's the sweet spot to make that profitable? You know, you want to be in a position where you want to make it expensive enough that that it's profitable, but you don't want to make it so expensive that you're going to gouge to the point where only the diehard of diehards that can actually afford it are going to pay for it, because how are you going to grow your sport then? It is very much a challenge as far as how do you thread that needle. I mean, Major League Baseball right now, I mean, they have teams that are Major League Baseball is producing teams, their games. There are teams that don't have an RSN anymore, in the sport,
The
where
San
Major
Diego
League,
Padres.
yeah, exactly. So, you look at that, at least Masson is, I guess at least Masson is functioning in that. I mean, I don't know. It's a low bar, obviously, but these are the things they
Well, they
have to
have a
figure
special
out.
on Monday night on the 83 Orioles, so I'll give them
Although,
that, you know?
are we sure it's a special, or is it just a rebroadcast of the celebration they did last year? That was my question when I heard that too, and I was wondering, because remember they did the celebration. I was wondering if it was just going to be a rebroadcast of that. We'll see.
Dude,
We'll find out. I DVR'd it,
this
and I'll
is
let you know.
like, for me, if it was the Angelos era, I would say it's awful, it's putrid or whatever. I don't know who the executive running the current Masson is, or whether they've exited the Angelos people from it altogether. So in the past, it would always be something awful, like some Oriole legendary game from 2008 with Chris Richards hit some walk-off against some, like, I have no idea, but they sold it to me. And I'm thinking, I love the Orioles. I love the 83 Orioles. I want to watch, you know? And I'm like, but somebody asked me in the bar the other night when I was out seeing Rob Fahey and Keith Brewer, they're like, when are you live? And I'm like, the first time you hear it. So if it's the first time I see it, then it won't be a regurgitated thing for me, I think.
Right. Fair enough.
Well,
Fair
for the
enough.
first time I've
So,
seen it.
but no.
Some of us were around in 1983 to witness it, you know? Some
Yeah.
of us.
Hey, I was around. I was just, 2 weeks old and had no idea what was going on. But no, I mean, I look, as we've talked about, with the Rubenstein group coming in, I mean, some of these things are going to take some time, and they do need to assess and survey and see where they are with mass and see where they are with basically everything other than baseball ops. I mean, that's kind of, I'm painting with a broad brush there, but it's kind of the truth, right? And that's what happens. I mean, whether you're talking about new ownership for a baseball team or a football team, whether you're talking about a corporation that brings in a new CEO that gets bought out by another company. I mean, there's a period of time where there's evaluating going on, and they're saying, okay, this is what works. This is what we like. This is what we don't like. These are the people that we think can be part of our new group moving forward. These are the people that, frankly, we need to move on from. And I think the Orioles are kind of in that. They're kind of in that period right now. So, not saying that you take forever doing that. At the same time, I don't think David Rubenstein made his fortune by being too brash, being too hasty in decision making. And in the meantime, he's got a really good baseball team on the field, that's winning and is bringing more people back to the ballpark. And you've got a really good floor to go off of if you're Rubenstein. So it's just a matter of now, how are you going to capitalize on that? I mean, I think we all would agree Camden Yards is never going to get back to where it was in 1994. It's a different time, right? It's not 1994 Camden Yards anywhere anymore, other than, I don't know, maybe Dodger Stadium. Maybe. I don't know. I
But
mean,
it
even
can't.
there, I'm not
No,
sure.
see, I
But
think I really, I've, I,
you
if
think it
I
can be
own the
what it
team
was
and
in.
you said that in a meeting to me that there's a ceiling to what we can do, I call bullshit on that because that's just who I am as a person. So I don't want to hear that it can't be done again. I
You
want
have
to
another
hear.
baseball team 30 miles away.
I understand that. And that's an
I'm
excuse and
let me and
that's
let me be clear.
reasonable.
Like, I'm not saying it can't be way better than what it is. I'm saying
Okay.
I don't think you're not going to sell out 81 games like you did in 1993.
Well, the expectation of
Who's
that for
doing
most
that?
of the people here, they've never seen it because they're not 30 years old, right? Like, so the people that it was a long, long time ago in a galaxy far away. I agree with you. Now, what can we
Right.
be? What can we be to a community where going to a football
Right.
game is a phone
That's why
number
I've said the
at
St.
any
Louis.
time?
I've given you my motto. I've said the St. Louis Cardinals. Instead of calling BS on me, even though I'm just speaking reality, because there is another team 30 miles down the road, and the greater, Baltimore has a lower population than it did then, for example. So there are challenges, and it's not going to be what it was in 1993. That doesn't mean it can't
They have
be
to
a
just go
heck of a lot
resell the game.
greater
They
than
do.
it is right now. Sure, okay, but I've given you my model. I said To me, I would aspire to be the St. Louis Cardinals.
Well, and to your point, that model
which
can't
isn't
be built with young people if they can't get the games and they don't care about the games.
Sure.
Or if
sure,
they only want to gamble in the games and they're not into the players, which is where football's gone, right? Football's gone much more away from we're local, we're Baltimore, we're the Ravens, we're for you, we're a community team, to we want to be everything to everybody around the world and have fans in London buying Lamar jerseys and betting, bet. And by the way, I'll cut it off at this because we could go betting. You and I could do a whole week on betting after. Like, that's all I see now on ESPN and all the talking heads is the Jonte Porter, the situation with Ohtani. I mean, all of that will be out in front, but that is where the funding's coming for all this in the minds of any David Rubenstein that put $1.7 billion out in front of
it. Is.
And even Cal Ripken can acknowledge that as a businessman who tried to run minor league baseball and got out of that business because it wasn't good business. Can we take a break? I want to talk football with you, brother. We got to get some draft. It's draft. Right.
Yeah, and just, you know, one final point, like, you know, as we were just talking about that, I think we both are in full agreement that the Orioles have an amazing opportunity here. I mean, this is an opportunity. I don't think it needs to be framed in a way of, you know, that it's dire or anything like that. I think they have an amazing, extraordinary opportunity. I think that's why David Rubenstein and his group wanted to buy it, right? I mean, but they have some pivotal, very critical decisions that they have to get right here over the next couple of years in order to sustain greatness. And I think that's where all of us are on the same page, that we want to see this thing not just be good in terms of just a year or two, but have this become something that people in this community can be really, really proud about in the way that they've been proud about the Ravens for a quarter century now, even though they're not perfect, but they've sustained something and made something that has been really, really good and been class of the NFL, you know, one of the top model organizations of the NFL for a long time. I think the Orioles can be that, but it's going to take a lot of work that extends beyond what they're doing on the field right now, which is pretty darn good.
He is Luke Jones. I am Nestor Aparicio. Together we are WNST and Baltimore Positive. I'll have the Pac-Man scratch-offs twice this week on the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. We will be at Greenmount Station and Greenmount Bowl on Wednesday doing the show and then watching some baseball at 4 o'clock over Greenmount Station. You can also bet there. They have a whole like little mini casino with the Parks Bet and everything they're doing there at Greenmount Station. So come on up. Also have a great crab cake. Haven't had the ribs in years. I'm going to sit and eat and hang out with the folks up in Hampstead. That's Wednesday afternoon. Friday, we're going to be at Fadley's Lexington Market. Be there live from 2 until 5. I'll have Pac-Man scratch-offs to give away. It's all brought to you by our friends at Liberty Pure Solutions, keeping my water absolutely crystal clean. And I'm appreciative of that as a well guy. It is well done. And also, our friends at Jiffy Lube MultiCare also take care of the oil changes and do that well at Jiffy Lube MultiCare. Friday at Fadley's, 2 to 5. Luke will be with us. We have draft coverage all weekend. And first and foremost, I've been really hard at work the last 2 months with Greg Landry at Blue Rock Productions on a documentary that I think everybody will appreciate. 25 years in, I get to stand up and brag for a minute. 40 years into our career, you can go. It is called No One Listens, Everyone Hears. It is a complete telling of how I found you and how you found me and how maybe you found yourself on a road trip or a bus trip or at an event or at Free the Birds or in the New Orleans March or wherever our paths have crossed. I am appreciative. And certainly my wife and I were very appreciative for all the folks who came up to us on Friday night. We just went out soaking wet. We didn't even smell good. We came from the gym and we were like out to watch Rob Fahey and Keith Brewer and people came up and made us cry saying so many nice things to us. So we're really appreciative. And in this segment, I just want to say thank you as well to Keith, John Allen, Mike Brillhart, Mickey Coachella, Gina Schock, Ray Bachman, and I know I'm leaving somebody out, Bill Cole from Cole Roofing, and our friends at Royal Farms as well for sponsoring everything we do, and Curio Wellness for putting together our 25th anniversary here at WNST. We're really proud of that. It is draft day. I have pictures of me at our first draft day party in 1997, 98, 99. I was up in New York in 96 with John Ogden and have the hat. So draft day is a big deal around here. We used to spell it D-R-A-U-G-H-T because we did it under a spigot at a firehouse, but we're going to do it on Thursday night peacefully on the internet. Luke will be covering all that, monitoring all that, and we will have our 25th anniversary film ready to go. No one listens. Everyone hears. No respect. It's a story of my life. We're Baltimore Positive. Stay with us.